It's time for the Chuck and Buck Show.
What?
Oh, you guys are crewing up?
Let's do this.
Girls, what y'all trying to do? 24 karat magic in the air. Head to toe, so bare. Look out.
Good morning and welcome in. It's been a hell of a week. Chuck and Buck Sports Radio 950 KJR, but we have made it to Friday. And so Chuck Powell, Bucky Jacobson, and Christopher Kidd will take you to 10 a.m. this morning here on our airwaves. A week of Kraken hockey. So Kraken week does continue. But so does the struggle. So in life. So Bucky, why don't we steal a page from Ian Furness and Kevin Shockey's book, Tell Me Something Good. Tell me a cute baby story or something to get us started. Lift my spirits here on a Friday. What do you got for me?
Well, Baby Grace is smiling, right?
Oh, so look at that.
Initially, first little bit, they're out, basically. Just kind of a blob of human that poops and eats, and you just want to keep them alive, right?
Yeah. I mean,
they don't know where their arms are going. I don't even know if she knows she has arms, right? They just flail around, hit her in her own face. It's just, there's really not a lot to it. You know, you got to hold their head up so they don't, like, just flop all over the place. She can hold her head up. She actually is flipping over already from her stomach to her back, which is like absurdly early. I don't know exactly when that's supposed to happen. I know Bear didn't do it at less than 3 weeks old. So she just basically is getting after it. And I have a feeling she's going to be gigantic because she does nothing but eat. I mean, nothing. But she occasionally rolls over or occasionally hits herself in the face or poops. But other than that, it's like literally nonstop. With Bear, I had a lot more time holding him because he would eat and then he would sleep and I would sleep in my chest. And it was so sweet and it was wonderful. With Grace, it's like she eats and she's happy for about, I don't know, 10 minutes, maybe 5 minutes. Most of the time. And so if I'll hold her right then. And then it's 5 minutes later. She's like, where's that boob at again? I need the booby. Mom, get over here. And so she squawks. We kind of feel like we need to keep her away from dogs because she sounds like a squeaky toy, like a dog squeaky toy. So, meh. Like just make some little squawky thing, and I'm like, I think that's going to attract dogs. They're going to think that they're supposed to play with her or something like that. So, overall, all is well in this part of the world. But I don't know. There's not a lot of sleep. That is one thing that's official. I knew that. I knew that taking this job, the sleep wasn't really all that easy. But now, boy, it's even tougher nowadays. But
I don't know if it's good parenting or not. I've never been down this road, but I'm pretty sure you're supposed to rub it in the face of your older child if the younger child is doing things they weren't. I think that's called good parenting. Yeah, it's like a motivating factor. I think psychologically it has a really good sound effect on the older kid to point out all the things you like more about the little one. Yeah,
I think you couldn't do that at that age. Look at she's already rolling over. What was wrong with you?
Even like photos to like compare and contrast. Like, look at my rollover golden child where you were just a big fat lump. You know, that kind of thing is really psychologically developing. I think we're fine. I don't know. Maybe I don't have the right information. I don't read a lot of books.
Look into that research.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't think that's probably going to go over all that well.
Take it for face value then. I mean, don't swear by it, but I think that's probably a good parenting tip for people out there. Yeah, do a lot of comparing like between children, like you're better at this and you stink at that.
Yeah.
A lot of reminders that way. Yeah.
Well, how about this? How about next time I see you, give that a shot in front of Kate, and then we'll see what Mama Bear does when she ridicule Baby Bear. I want to let you try that experiment out.
Yeah.
Cool?
Okay. Yeah.
Good luck.
We'll give that a shot and see where it goes. I'll do anything. I'll even take a beating if I can get into public at some point in my life. So, if I can actually step outside my front door without chaos unfurling, I'll take a beating or four. I'll take four straight nights of beatings if I can just leave my house. How about that?
Oh, I hear you.
It's Chuck and Buck Sports Radio 950 KJR. We got a lot to cover here today. As I mentioned, it is Kraken week, but I want to start with the Mariners here because I said this yesterday on the show. I think that they were starting, and look, there's a lot of baseball to be played, but we got like a week to decide. You know, how serious are we about this playoff push this year? I mean, this is not the goal necessarily. This is not the objective. I believe it is a goal, but the goal of the organization is the rebuild. That's what's sacred. That's what needs to be protected. And, you know, we're not going to let anything interfere with that, even a push for the playoffs, no matter how likely or unlikely that might be. At least that's my approach to it. I believe behind closed doors, that would be the honest answer you'd get from Jerry DePoto, John Stanton, and Scott Servais about this topic. But DePoto has gone public as to saying that, hey, look, the team has played well. They're exceeding expectations. They've overcome a lot of adversity. Here we are, a week shy of the trading deadline. We're, you know, within shouting distance of making the playoffs and perhaps ending a playoff drought. And he said yesterday, I think we owe it to the team to try to support them with a couple of players, maybe add at the trading deadline. And so, obviously, there's a lot here in the next 7 days that's going to put the heat on Jerry DePoto. But I would also say in this 7 days, you're facing a dire stretch in terms of making this decision. You got four against the A's and three against the Astros. So 7 games against the two teams that you're trying to chase down to try and make the playoffs. And so I dubbed this the biggest series of the year to date last night, and I don't think there's any argument against that. This is huge, particularly considering what decisions Jerry DePoto has to make. And so, Bucky, you get to the game last night. It's tight. Tom Murphy hits a home run, makes it 2-1. You got Kendall Graveman and Rafael Montero warming up in the bullpen. So your best reliever and maybe your worst reliever are side-by-side in the bullpen right now. And they don't get the run in the eighth to tie it, and apparently that unearths the decision, well, we're really not in this one, so let's go to Montero instead of Graveman. And, I mean, I get it all. I get that it's 162 games, and it's too early to put too much emphasis on one game, but, Bucky, I got Kendall Graveman loosened. I'm within a run. I'm putting Kendall Graveman in the game in the eighth inning. I'm not going to Rafael Montero at that point. I don't know how you feel about it.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, there's some questionable decisions here and there, and it's kind of boils down to, at one point in time, I mean, I think coming into the season, they thought Montero, at that point, they thought Montero was the closer. Now we're well over halfway into the season, and he has proven to not be good in the late situations. Not this year. You know, he might be good next year. He has been good before,
and I'll
but
just
he's not
quickly,
right now.
I'll just quickly say, I'm not giving up on him. I mean, I'm not saying cut him from the roster, but I'm saying you've got a one-run game. And I realize it's just game number, what was it last night, 98 out of 162. But with the decision that is pending and the team that you are playing and the fact that you are in a race, it just felt more important down one run to keep it a one-run game. And let's go with the guy that's got the ERA under 1 versus the guy that's got the ERA over 7.
Yeah, well, I'm with you, man. I mean, I don't even know for sure if those. He's got a pitch at this point. If you're going to keep him on the roster, then you're going to have to use him at certain points and times. And I guess it was his turn. He was the guy that was due up to go. If you use him in the eighth, and I'm not against what you're talking about. It's just now all of a sudden. Are you going to bring him back to go 2 innings? Because you do, like you said, you end up having 3 more games against these guys that are very important. So I don't think early, the first game of this little 7-game stretch that is super important, you would want to burn him. And yet, if he went out there and held him, you came back and tied the ball game, you're going to probably want to throw him out there for a second inning. Now he's not going to be available for you for the next game at least. And I think that there's probably something along those lines kind of thing. I just hope. You know, just hope. Because Montero's went out there and gotten 3 outs without giving up something. it just isn't very often. I mean, the Montero experience is been rough and rocky. That's why he's got the 7 ERA that he has. And it was tough last night because you could just feel the wind just kind of be sucked right out of the sails when he went up there and did what he did, giving up a few knocks and a couple runs. All of a sudden, they were down. They were, you know, they weren't putting much offense together. You kind of felt like, okay, now they're within one. They're just one good swing away from tying this thing up, or a walk and a blast and walking away winners out of this thing. And he kind of took that opportunity away. So I'm with you. It's definitely something to critique. I just don't know. I have a feeling that they probably were thinking, you know, we want to have Graveman for, especially if we have a one-run lead, if we can put two runs together after a zero from Montero. But regardless, neither one of those things happened because Montero went out there and sucked.
I don't know if I'm buying that, because Graveman hasn't pitched more than an inning all year long. They had him up for the eighth in case we tie it. So the obvious, I mean, under a dream scenario, we tie it here. We go to Graveman in the eighth. We take the lead in the bottom of the eighth, and Steckenrider pitches the ninth. I don't think that they were getting him up in the eighth to pitch two innings, because I'm pretty sure, and I'm looking it all up right now just to make sure, I don't think he's pitched more than an inning all season long. Okay, wait a minute. There's he's got four of them. So five of them.
He's got a couple.
So, you know, maybe you do go for the – so either way, they were willing in the eighth to put him in the game. So,
right.
And if that meant he's pitching the eighth and the ninth, then he's pitching the eighth and the ninth. So I'm trying not to put too much emphasis, as I said, on this series
right.
or on this individual game. But, Bucky, I truly believe that the next seven games could determine just how aggressive you're going to be on the 30th of July, where you're deciding, you know, we might part with a couple of prospects in order to improve this baseball team. I think you go 1-6 against the Astros and the A's, you're selling. And I think that's where you're at on this teeter-totter right now. You go 1-6, you're not only not buying, you're now selling. You're sitting there barely over 500, chasing two teams that just, you know, beat the crap out of you this week. Are you really going to go for it at that point? Are you going to try to add anything to this roster? You know, just to try? Just to take the outside shot of playing one playoff game to get into possibly the later rounds? I think if they bungle the next seven games, not only are we not buying, we should be selling at that point. And so I am putting the priority on let's try to make the playoffs, and that means let's try to win these next seven games. And if you're down by one in the eighth and you've already got them loose and you're already willing to go two innings with your best reliever, then put them in the game. What are we going to our worst reliever for at that moment?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it just boils down to the difference between being, you know, down one. And I hear you. The difference, especially as tough as it was for them to scratch together any offense against Manaea, I think that it was down one. If it was tied ball game, I think maybe they do go there, obviously. Obviously, I think that's what they were doing. That's why they had him warming up. But I think it boils down to kind of trying to think about, you know, just the rest of this kind of little stretch run. They know how important these games are. The team does, Service does, DePoto does. And, I mean, in all honesty, I don't know for sure if they're really looking at just, you know, just this seven games. I think that they kind of maybe are looking at the entire season and looking at who it is they're trying to leapfrog. Obviously, you're playing against a couple teams in your division that you're trying to leapfrog for that potential spot. But you got to look at the Yankees are starting to kind of come together a little bit. You know, Toronto's got a better squad than you, I would say, at this point in time, a more ready team for sure. I just think that I'm not 100% sure that they're necessarily wanting to buy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I actually do. And that's why it's weird that Jerry's being so outspoken about we owe it to these guys to buy right now over the course of the last 72 hours, because I've kind of felt the same way you do. I think that spoke of 1,000 words, what you just said. I've kind of thought this entire stretch, this entire month of Mitch, where we've been breaking down the Haniger possibility, that if you corner Jerry DePoto and he gave him some truth serum, he'd tell you, man, I hope we lose, you know, 6 out of 7 games, because I want to trade it. I want to sell at the deadline one last time. I really do.
Right.
And I want to move Haniger, and I might move a couple of other pieces that people are going to be angry about, because next year's our push, and we really don't see Haniger as part of our future. But he has gone on this you know, rampage lately, talking about how he's buying right now. But Bucky, you buy right now. Let's say you buy right now. You're 51-46, and good for you. Good accomplishment. You know, you've overachieved. You've overcome some adversity. But between now and the trading deadline, you now have 6 games. Okay, let's say they don't go 1-5 in those, like I was saying earlier. Let's say they go 2-4. All right, so 2-4. And that's a possibility, right? These are two of the better teams in the American League. So now all of a sudden you're 3 games over 500 with 48 hours to make a deal. Are you really 3 games over 500 and 5 games out of the wild card with a team that really, you know, seems to be defying the odds right now? The record doesn't really indicate necessarily how good they are. Are you really going to be buying at the deadline at that point?
Well, it seems like that's what he seems to be saying. And yeah. I think that to some degree, I think that's a little bit of kind of throwing a bone to the players because of how well they've played or how they've kind of stepped up a little bit earlier, just early in the first 100 games or so of this season, than he would have expected them to, or maybe then the outside world would have expected them to. And so it's kind of, he's saying that, saying, hey, you guys have earned us going out and doing it. Now, if all of a sudden they flounder here right before the trade deadline, then all of a sudden it's like, well, okay. You know, right? And now we have to look at the big picture, and do we want to take a small step in the direction that got us in this situation to begin with, which is make some sort of move hoping to break this drought that in turn does kind of harm and hinder the actual rebuild, and I don't think that he wants to do that either.
I think he should have just been quiet, played this thing out. Like I said, you got a 48-hour window. Make all the moves behind the scenes that you want. Set up all the trades that you want. There's no, I mean, the guy made trades from his sick bed, for goodness sake. You know nothing's going to stop him from picking up the phone. So do all that you want. But I thought, I said this all along with Mitch, I'd wait till the 30th. I would wait till the last second before I make my decision on what to do with this guy. If you're in it, making the playoffs, I think, should be a priority. And Haniger can certainly help get you there, but just not the priority. And so why make it public that you're buying? And then all of a sudden, you know, you're 5 days away, you go hit a snag, and you've now lost 2 straight games, and the competition's only get tougher from this point forward. And now what if you don't do anything at the deadline? What if you go silent? You just open yourself up for more criticism at that point. So I was perfectly fine with him waiting till the 29th, where they have a day off, and the 30th, which is the last day of the deadline, to kind of assess where are we, should we be entertaining going for it, going for a playoff spot at all. And instead, he's kind of announced that, yeah, we're going to buy. Well, you end up buying, and you're at the trading deadline a couple games over 500, and that feels like a fool's errand.
Yeah, it most certainly does. I went on with Softy and Dick last night, and they kind of asked that same thing. And Dick's question was, doesn't it feel a little weird to put so much stock in 7 games? Because it is. It's 7 games. I mean, you could get really hot. Your offense could be lights out for 7 games, and all of a sudden you're like, all right, let's go. Let's do it. I do think that is a little bit, that would be a little bit odd to go ahead and put that much stock in just this next week's worth of games. That said, it is kind of one of those, if your team ends up going out there and playing like they believe they're a playoff squad, then it feels like, okay, we can do a little something as long as it's kind of a safe move, something that doesn't harm the big picture. I don't think that they're going to. I don't think that Jerry, ultimately, like you said, if he gave him some truth serum, really wants to go out and have to make a move to think about this year as the year that we're going to do something that could potentially hinder the big picture.
All right, let's find out what's on tap for today.
This is Chuck and Buck's What's On Tap.
Hey, buddy, what's the deal? What are you talking about?
Brought to you by Buddy's Goodies and Glass in Renton. Remember, it's always 420 at Buddy's. Now with What's On Tap, here's Chuck and Buck.
It is Kraken week, and we will certainly talk some Kraken hockey. We've already had the expansion draft. The schedule was announced yesterday, so we'll be talking about that today. The amateur draft is held today and tomorrow, and we've already traded a player. There will be no Pitlick dinner, Bucky. He has been moved to Calgary, so if there's a Pitlick dinner, then take your bowl of mustacholi and go to Calgary, I guess.
I had a whole bowl of poutine, the gravy for it anyways. I had it all sitting in the pot already, so now I'm going to be eating that by myself all week. Yeah, that kind of sucks, but hey, they're moving and shaking. That's what we thought they were going to do. There was a whole bunch more moves to fill out this roster, and they're not disappointing. I mean, first day after the amateur draft, and all of a sudden they've traded one guy, and they're moving and shaking.
Yeah, no doubt. And we are entering phase number two of the first ever Canada Draft Appendance holiday celebration. And so we will try not to come off in any way as experts. And I don't think we'll have a hard time doing that.
Nope.
But we will talk a little bit about the amateur draft, what I'm reading, what I'm hearing, and who they might end up taking. So we'll do that today. Where do I have that? Oh, 8:45. We'll also talk about the schedule at 7:30 today. Sounders win last night 1-0, so it doesn't look like they like losing all that much. They come away with a victory coming off their first loss of the year, so they're back on track, and they don't have much time to rest because they play again on Sunday against Sporting KC. So just a little bit of time here before the Sounders are back out on the pitch. And training camp next week will be the focus. This week was the Kraken. Next week we'll have some trading deadline, but let's face it, training camp's going to launch next week for the Seahawks, and we will launch starting on Monday our Elite Eight storylines in our Chuck Knox tournament, which we will reveal today officially at 9 o'clock for you. But coming up next, one of the big storylines is certainly Jamal Adams, and we got a little bit of information yesterday on the puck program. Mike Garofolo weighed in on what's going on with Jamal Adams, so we'll hear what he said next. Sports Radio 950 KJ.
Pass.
All right, it is Chuck and Buck, Sports Radio 950 KJR here on this Friday morning. Chuck Powell, former Mariner Bucky Jacobson with you as well. There's so much going on this week here in Seattle. We will certainly talk some Kraken hockey, both schedule and amateur draft, which will be held tonight. And into Saturday, we're certainly going to talk Major League Baseball, not just the loss last night by the Mariners to the A's in a big game. I don't tab many games, big games this early in the season, but I felt that was a big game last night. So we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. Plus, we are 1 week away from the Major League Baseball trading deadline, and there's more to discuss there. Now that Nelson Cruz will not be returning home to Seattle, and that's got some Mariner fans a little fired up. So we'll talk about that at 7 o'clock. But we are also on a countdown to training camp. I can't believe that Wednesday training camp will be underway, Bucky. It just seems insane.
It does seem insane. I mean, there really is never an off season. I mean, the second that the season's over, you discuss, well, how that season went and what they have to do better the next season, unless you're the team that wins it all, obviously. And then there's just storyline after storyline that you don't have to talk about, but that are legit storylines. So it never really seems like it rests. But I think that's why it feels like the offseason just kind of blows by. And next thing you know, we turn around. I have a baby. I look up. And next thing you know, the Seahawks are getting ready to start again. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, exactly. And we've been doing a countdown of sorts here on Chuck and Buck. And we are down to the Elite Eight stories. We thank all those that are voting. There's still a couple that you can vote for, but it looks like the results are all but a foregone conclusion. So at 9 o'clock today in our Chuck Knox tournament, we will announce. We won't have any matchups today. We will simply use the 9 o'clock segment to announce the Elite Eight stories that have survived. You voted as the top storylines heading into training camp out there. And Jamal Adams is all over this sucker, Bucky. I mean, Jamal Adams' contract and Jamal Adams, the football player, are two of the eight stories remaining. You know, I'll go ahead and reveal that before 9 o'clock. So, obviously, you can circle Jamal Adams, and it feels to me like the most interesting thing in camp.
Yeah, and understandably so, because there's all of the variables included with this guy. It's not just that he's an exciting football player to watch. It's how aggressive the move was to go get him, and obviously Pete Carroll loves him. They might be doing the Lady and the Tramp thing, like
yeah.
You said, eating the piece of spaghetti. That is quite possible, and yet
they love
he was unhealthy, or he was unhappy with the contract that he had when he came to Seattle, and so you kind of thought that they were going to have to re-up him, and yet it's been kind of quiet on that front, and that doesn't necessarily mean that all is well and that they are, you know, enjoying every last little bite of that noodle on their way towards each other. They could be kind of, you know, frowning at one another, or I could see a frown coming from him at least, like, hey, when are we going to, you know, make this thing official, that I'm going to be here for the long haul and I'm going to be the highest paid safety in the game. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot to it, and if you double down on after giving up as much as you did, you all of a sudden pay him big money. Now all of a sudden you've kind of solidified that decision is set in concrete, and you're going to have to live with it moving forward.
Well, yeah, and now it's no longer, I mean, it's fun right now. You're right. It's Lady and the Tramp sharing a noodle right now. It's, you know, spoon feeding each other some soft serve ice cream out at the park right now. It can still be that between Jamal Adams and Pete Carroll, but there is something about when that calendar flips from the day before training camp to the day of training camp, and you're not under contract, or at least you're not on it. Let's not he's under contract. You're not on the practice field. You know,
right.
Then the relationship, it changes at that point. I mean, it's, you know, there's one thing to talk about having an affair in a marriage. The day that you have one, things change.
Yeah.
You know, or the day you get caught having one, things change. And so
Yes. The
calendar flips from one day to the next, and suddenly you've got yourself a controversy. And so they seem to be getting along right now, but there's going to be a time where, you know, Pete Carroll's going to say, I need you in practice. And then there's going to be that same day where Jamal Adams and his agent are going to say, well, we need you to give us $20 million a year. So something's, you know, something's got to break one way or the other, and that day is coming. I mean, that's going to be the first day. That's what we're talking about. It's going to go down on Wednesday. Well, at this point, since we are nearing that time, we're looking for any information that we can get, and it just so happens that Puck's got one of the best insiders in the business on his show every week, Mike Garofalo from the NFL Network. So Puck asked him yesterday, what's going on? What are you hearing about Jamal Adams?
They are willing to make him the highest-paid safety. That is my understanding, okay? The highest-paid safety in the NFL. So once you're there, now you just got to massage this thing, right? Because he's not in his right mind going to sit there and say, well, the highest-paid safety, well, now add $5 million a year. No, you're already in the neighborhood. I'm going to tell you that I think they're close. Now, I don't mean to say that and everybody in 3 days goes, hey, no deal yet. You said they were close. No, because I know he's still, you know, pushing and pulling, and, you know, his agent had Tre'Davious White, and he really carried that thing out as far as he possibly could with the Bills before he finally did a deal. So I think in the end, you got a deal. If it's not at the start of training camp, it's sometime shortly thereafter, certainly before the start of the regular season.
Well, that sounds easy, Bucky. I mean, if that's
right,
the scenario, then it sounds easy. If you're saying, hey, look, you're invested enough in Jamal Adams at this point, you know, and we obviously know they like him, they want him, and Pete Carroll thinks there are great things ahead of him. Otherwise, they don't make the trade to begin with. And Pete Carroll loves. There are cartoon hearts floating around Pete Carroll's head over Jamal Adams, all right? And so if you're that close, if you really are the safety that is saying, hey, look, I get it. You're offering top safety money. I appreciate that. I feel I'm a little different, and we all know there's more money on the horizon. Let's just push it a little north. I'll get into practice. I mean, you're saying $16 million, that's the going rate. I think the going rate by next year could be $19 million for a safety. So why don't we go $17.5, $18 million? Then I think that gets done the day of camp, Bucky.
Mm-hmm.
But if their camp, and see, this is where I think Mike Garofalo might be wrong on this. I think he's sitting there, he and his agent behind closed doors saying, safeties make $16 million. But top defenders make 21, 22. And if that's the conversation, then I'm not going there. And that's where it gets ugly. So, you know, I guess, because I'm not in love with having Jamal Adams at even $17 million, but I get the investment that's been made. So I guess I'm rooting for what Mike Garofalo is kind of mapping out for us, that they're close and they're probably going to have to go a little north of top safety money, and that'll get it done. I hope that's the case, because that seems like the smoothest waters during this sale.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, right now, Justin Simmons of the Broncos, awesome, and awesome team, by the way. He's the top guy. Yeah, he's a top guy at $15.25 million. And so, yeah, I think that the Seahawks, they know for a fact, I mean, they know this, the ins and outs of the business far more than I do, and I know for a fact that they just knew when they brought him over that they put themselves between a rock and a hard place to some extent, because they were going to have to extend him after giving they want to extend him first and foremost, but they were going to have to extend him based on how much they gave up for him, I would think, and unless he just flat out tries to kind of hold their feet to the fire for $23 million or something silly, then they would be like, okay, well, that's just not even going to happen. That's unrealistic. But if they're somewhere north of what Justin Simmons is, right, $16-17 million, like you said, then it seems like they're going to be like, okay, we kind of, that's where we see you at. We understand that you know, you're an all pro guy and that you do some things that are different. We're not even going to bring up the things that you didn't do last year in coverage that wasn't all that great. We're going to go ahead and we'll believe you that was, you were hindered with injuries and now you're repaired and you're going to be back to normal. But you got to kind of give us a little bit of a, you got to understand that you're not, even though you did break a record for sacks by a defensive back, you're still not an edge rusher. You're not a guy that I can line up against a tackle every single snap and you're going to get after the quarterback. 9.5 sacks is good, but it's 9.5 sacks coming from a place where people aren't normally coming from, and so you're kind of getting sneaky a little bit versus a guy that lines up, puts his hand in the dirt or stands there and beats a guy time after time like a normal edge rusher does. So I'm with you. I don't know. I have a feeling that he actually has some sort of an understanding of how this whole thing's going down. The one thing that I would question is whether or not he's thinking, well, there's going to be more money next year. Well, if there's going to be more, if you want them to play the game negotiation-wise as if they have more money like they will next year, then you need to play out under your contract this year and then wait for next year if you want to ask for something absurd that's more than that $17 million mark, which I think is the happy spot as well.
Yeah, but I don't know I don't think he's sitting there asking for edge rusher money. I don't think that's the case that they're making. I think what they're saying is, don't label me. I don't want to make edge rusher money. I don't want to make safety money. I'm a weapon. They want a new category. I don't even think that's even debatable right now. I mean, based on all the stories that we're hearing, what we've heard is that Jamal Adams and his agent don't want to be labeled. They believe that he's a weapon. They want a new category of defenders that he falls under. So I don't think that they are comparing themselves to edge rushers. I think they're saying, we've got one of the best defensive players in the league. He's a difference maker. He's transcendent. And so we're going to create a new category. He's worth X amount of dollars. Now, I don't know where that money is. If Garofalo's right, then they'll get this done. If others we've had on, like Will Brinson's right, then there's no way I would agree to the terms that are being floated around, that he's north of $20 million per year. Because I'm really not even sure he's worth 16. But I'm certain that he's not worth 20. This is going to be a big topic, obviously, all next week, and we'll see. I mean, this is either earth-shattering, it's all we talk about the day of training camp, or we'll have a nice resolution, and then we can just debate whether or not he was worth the amount of money they signed him for. Coming up next, there's another big story in the National Football League. COVID just continues to haunt us at this point, and it doesn't look like it will deprive us of the Olympics, which start tonight. We'll discuss it next. Sports Radio 950K
Line.
It's underway tonight, Bucky, and it looks like we're going to have one. You know, they're going to at least light the torch here tonight. The Summer Olympics, after a year wait, actually, you know, 4 years wait, and then a fifth year wait, an additional year of wait. Here we are. The athletes have assembled. They're going to light the torch. They're going to play this music. Are you ready for the Olympics?
I am ready for the Olympics, man. I mean, I don't know what it is about the Olympics exactly. I mean, I don't love every single sport out there. I mean, some of them I don't want to watch, but there's a lot of them that I do that I really don't watch except for every 4 years. And We didn't have it last year, understandably so, and there was worry that we weren't going to have it even this year. You know, I think that, you know, Tokyo, they started having a little bit of a rise, a spike of some sort a month or so ago, and so it kind of was in question whether or not they were going to be able to do it and do it safely, and yet now it seems like they've kind of decided we think we can, and, you know, taking the precautions necessary as far as fans go, and they're going to get it underway. Yeah, I'm ready to see it. You know, it's not just my own selfish reason of wanting to watch these folks, these athletes compete, but for them, you know, there's a lot of these guys and gals that you know, they'll never be able to compete in another Olympics. You know, they didn't make the one before, and they quite possibly won't be able to make the next one in 4 years or 3 years from now if this one doesn't go off. So for them, I really hope this thing does go off without a hitch.
What's your go-to event at the Summer Olympics? I think we're probably all Summer Olympic people. I mean, I know you've got Norse blood in you, but, hockey and skiing only go so far for me. So this,
yeah.
I mean, you got gymnastics, you got swimming, you've got track and field, you've got basketball. I mean, I guess I shouldn't even have to ask Kid what his go-to event's going to be, but what's yours?
I would have to say, well, I like the sprints and the relays and the track and field, and then swimming are probably my swimming is usually the one that I kind of, it's the one that I never watch other than the Olympics, you know what I mean? So that's kind of where it's, oh, I get my fill of swimming, and it's the best of the best. Being a swimmer myself growing up, I know how these guys and gals, they train literally to taper their body for this actual event, to be as fast as they've ever been in their entire life for this, the way that they train. So it's seeing the best of the best across the globe come together and compete. And I mean, sometimes it comes down to just the length of your fingernail and whether you win a gold or a silver or don't even get on the podium. So it's, I'm a huge fan of swimming, but it's not something that I watch other than the Olympics.
Actually, this might be the toughest question Chris Kidd has to answer because his beloved basketball, and yet he also loves track and field. And I'm going to say that you're not, basketball's not number one on your list for the Summer Olympics, that you're track and field because this is the only time track and field truly gets to shine on the global scale. Am I right?
They're still big three, but track and field, it's a close one because I'll still watch the big three. Now that's back in.
Oh, okay. So you got other basketball.
Yeah, and then I'll always go back and watch 2016 finals because that's one of my favorite. I'll go back and watch some old Pistons.
Are you saying you'll go back and watch old basketball games three on three over basketball at the Olympics?
Probably, most likely, yeah, because I mean, USA is going to win.
Wow. Right?
So yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if it's on, I'll watch it, but if, you know, there's nothing else on, I will definitely go back and watch a classic NBA Finals game or just watch some old hoops. You know, I'll watch anything old school pretty much, try to get into old hoops, try to watch some more MJ film, Larry Bird, stuff like that.
Look
especially
that,
during the downtime
Bucky.
Before the NFL season, which is starting next Wednesday. So
look at that, Bucky. How about that? He's going to watch some old Michael Jordan games, maybe even over Olympic track and field. I'm a little surprised.
Or 3-on-3 over the actual game of basketball. That's surprising to me. That is.
Kid's he's an interesting character, man. I mean, just when
really
you think
is.
You know a guy, you know, he zigs when we
throws
think
a wrinkle.
He's going
to
zag.
But there
That's
has
right.
to be nothing on, okay? This is...
Well, you got the Olympics on.
If the Olympics on, I'm watching the Olympics. But if there's nothing on, yes, I will dive into old school basketball, watch more LeBron highlights because, gosh, he's so great. But
Yeah. All right. Maybe someday, Bucky, we'll be able to talk him into watching a baseball game. That'll be fun.
I doubt it. The other day, he was watching some replay of an old NBA Finals game while the Major League Home Run Derby was going on.
I know.
To drive to wherever he was at and slap him.
Yeah, I'm like, this isn't anybody that I know. This ain't no friend of mine. All right, coming up next, 7 o'clock hour, speaking of baseball, we'll torture Chris Kidd by talking about the trade deadline, which is 1 week away. Nelson Cruz was traded last night, and not to Seattle. It's got some people pretty bothered here in town. We'll discuss whether or not we should have been more in on Nelly. Sports Radio 950 KJ.